We're going to expand our weekly video segment to take you into the back shelves of your local video store, back where it says horror videos and where kids are devouring some awful films that we call the video nasties.
Are you freebasing? Inquiring minds want to know.
I have to break free from this culture of mechanical reproductions and the thick incrustations dying on the surface.
Fuck the prime time, bitch!
The pain, I can assure you, will be exquisite. As for our deaths, come with me and be immortal.
We have such sights to show you.
We've got to return some videotape.
Hello, horror hounds, and welcome to the It Slays podcast. I'm your Rat King Rowan.
I'm Colton.
And it's Jill.
And we are back for a very special episode. We say that every month, but this is super special because it's a Patreon pick, and we only do that like once a month. So we are here with a Patreon pick. First, we're going to let Colton explain what a Patreon pick is and how you yourself could possibly make us watch something good, something terrible, I don't know, something medium.
Yeah, so how our Patreon picks work is if you are pledged at the Horror Hound level on our Patreon, you know, patreon.com/itslayspodcast for, I think it's a period of 6 months is what we said.
I believe yes.
Yeah, after 6 months, we'll reach out to you and we'll ask, hey, you know, what would you like us to review? And yeah, we'll review whatever your pick is as long as we haven't covered it in the past on the show. So yeah, if you want to pledge at the $5 amount on Patreon, you can do so at patreon.com/itslayspodcast like our other horror hounds, Holly, Nicholas, Patrick, Mark, Steven, Joy, Carvey, and Dan do each and every month.
And speaking of Mark, it was his pick and he picked a doozy for us.
He picked something all right. This is a little weird for me because Mark's a very close personal friend of mine. And obviously we've gone back and forth in the DMs now about, you know, Graveyard Shift, you know, after I watched it. So ultimately, I know why he chose this film already. But now I have to, you know, get you guys and the listeners up to speed. So he was torn between this and 2001's Pulse, but ultimately decided on Graveyard Shift because he hasn't seen it covered much in the podcast space. Like most of us, he's a huge fan of Stephen King and just found that the works adapted in this era, like the late 80s, early 90s, were oftentimes judged too harshly or garnered, you know, a lot of unwarranted poor critical reception. So he thinks Graveyard Shift is worth another look. He says that it features some great creature effects, some filthy sets that really help sell the setting. And he's not someone who really uses a review rubric. He's one of those on Letterboxd that just logs what he watches and doesn't review it. You know, he's above all that. But he did tell me that he thinks this movie is good. So on our scale, I believe that'd probably translate to a yay. So a big thanks to Mark for being a Patreon supporter and for picking our movie tonight, Graveyard Shift, for us all to discuss.
So let's get into the trailer and we'll be back with the synopsis and first experiences.
This is the new horror from the mind of Stephen King.
This place is infested.
That might be the understatement of the year.
And the deeper you go,
when's the last time you've been to a graveyard?
The colder you feel, the hungrier it gets. Graveyard Shift.
Good benefits. Early retirement.
Rated R. Starts Friday, October 26th at theaters everywhere.
Graveyard Shift was directed by Ralph S. Singleton and written by John Esposito, and the story is as follows. John Hall, a drifter who wanders into a small town in Maine, finds himself in desperate need of a job, so he seeks employment at the community's top business, a large textile mill. He is hired to work the graveyard shift overnight until dawn, and along with a few others is charged with cleaning out the old mill's rat-infested basement. At first, this task strikes the workers as simple enough, but as they proceed deeper underground, they soon encounter a winged monstrosity intent on devouring them all.
So first experiences, is this our first time seeing Graveyard Shift, or have we seen all the Stephen King adaptations, good, bad, ugly, it doesn't matter? Colton, we'll start with you.
Yeah, so I feel like I've seen my fair share of Stephen King adaptations, good, bad, doesn't matter, you know, especially like Mark and I, we used to have like a monster movie Mondays where we used to choose a bunch of corny movies to watch like over the course of a year or two. But weirdly enough, I've never seen this one. I do know that it was based on a short story by Stephen King, but I also haven't read the short story. So I just came into this basically knowing that a lot of people hated it. And I kind of assumed that it had something to do with rats. And yeah, here I am. This is the first time for me. What about you, Rowan?
Yeah, so this has been on my radar because I remember being a kid going into video stores and the poster for this being in the video store.
It has a great poster, to be fair.
It is super iconic, and I really want, I need to find a print of it to put up. And this is another one of those. It's the sad tale of Rowan. I bought the, $30, $40 collector edition Blu-ray of Graveyard Shift when it came out. Scream Factory put it out. I had never watched it. It just has sat on my shelf. I had heard, good and bad things about it. So I've always wanted to watch it, just never had the time. Yeah, this is definitely my first time seeing it. What about you, Jill?
Well, first of all, I'm kind of surprised that you haven't seen it yet, since the artwork is very My Bloody Valentine.
Yeah.
Reminiscent. So, yeah. But it's first time for me. Never heard of it. Never saw it before. So, yeah, but I did read the short story.
As did I. Jill sent it to me, and I read
I read it the other day, and I really liked it.
Yeah, maybe when we're discussing the movie, we'll get into some points at which it differs. I never read the short story, so I have no idea personally, but you should point out some of the differences to me as we discuss.
Absolutely.
So, let's get into the rat burger of it all. We know where we're going to start. Our favorite scene and or favorite kill. Jill, why don't you kick us off?
Oh, dang. You're really going to give me the honor of claiming the rat surfing scene?
Oh, baby. That's a big scene. That's a big scene.
That total highlight of the movie for me. Hilarious. Love the song choice. Love these little rats going down this dank water on pieces of wood.
Yep.
Amazing. Iconic. That's all I gotta say.
Weirdly enough, that scene, I think, might be an homage to Apocalypse Now. And I don't know if we want to get into it right now before we even talked about our favorite scenes, but there's a lot of weird coincidences / homage in this movie that I think is directly referencing Apocalypse Now. And there's also a scene that I think is ripped straight from Jaws as well.
Okay.
Yeah, that scene in particular, I think, is Apocalypse Now reference. I believe it.
And what's your favorite scene or kill?
For me, I gotta go with Brogan falling through the stairs, which I don't even know if you guys remember because it was such a quick moment. But I absolutely love when people fall in movies. And there's a scene when Brogan, who's the big guy who's constantly screaming, he's using the hose and he's holding it as if it's a minigun or something, just screaming like he's in Predator or something. And he tries to escape the basement one time and he just falls through the stairs. And when he falls, he just keeps falling, and then he falls through the floor. And then he keeps falling more, and then he lands in the cavern underground. And I was just bursting out laughing. It reminded me of that scene in American Psycho 2 where William Shatner falls out the window that I loved so much and had to put the Linkin Park over it. This was this is the same thing where I was oh God, I kind of want to cut this out and just put it up on the, on the Instagram or something. It was just great. I love that scene. Obviously there's a lot of scenes in this movie that I think are excellent that I'm sure we'll discuss, or, they're great for their own reasons, but I just got such a big kick out of Brogan falling through the stairs that I had to say it was my favorite scene. What about you, Rowan?
My favorite scene was the Exterminator's death.
Oh,
played by iconic Brad Dourif, who I just love in everything. But yeah, it was pretty gnarly. It was really shocked me. It was a surprising death. The quick kill of just the granite just kind of pushing against his head. You get to see basically the back of his head, just all over the rocks. And
yeah.
And just really gnarly, really great early 90s practical effect gore, just loved it.
Yeah, that's a great scene. I actually rewound that because I didn't understand the logistics of what exactly happened there, but the ground sinking in and where he was positioned and how did his head get crushed and all this stuff. I was what's going on here? So I had to rewind that. There's a couple of points in this movie that I had to rewind to kind of figure out what was on the go.
Colton but, doing the real work so you don't have to
listen. I have a note about Doris Do you guys remember Doris?
Oh, yes.
Rat?
Oh,
you
yeah.
You do remember Doris?
Oh, okay. Doris.
All right. So let's get into the cold open of this movie, which I think is excellent.
Yeah.
But I was so confused starting off where, you know, this man, he's talking to Doris the rat. She's sitting on the chair. And then he's like, oh, Doris, you know, you're disgusting or whatever. And I'm like, did Doris intentionally piss on the chair? What happened here? So I had to rewind a couple of times and see, like, was the chair just naturally wet? Did the rat intentionally piss on the chair? What is happening in this scene? And yeah, it seems like Doris intentionally pissed on the chair. Our guy got angry. And then you get that excellent shot of all these rats just being rats, just all like eaten and looking, but they play menacing music over it, and they're all like in the rafters looking down at him, and they're on the stairs and whatnot, and it's like, oh, it's so corny, but it's so good. I really love that.
It's also funny because the rats are rats, but some of them are really smart rats, and they're always fucking with the people in the facility. So I love that.
Oh, yeah. It was great. I hope Doris wasn't the one that got sacrificed. But I mean, it certainly is possible. But yeah, like I just thought the intro of this movie like went pretty hard. Like I was surprised with like it just goes on so long. It's like probably 10 minutes. And this guy's in there like, you know, the rats are like eating the blood. They all kind of descend on him. They put him through the loom and all this shit. Right. It was a great, great intro. And also I was like, oh, cool. There's going to be a big rat in this movie. And I was let down. There wasn't a big rat in the movie, but the intro was sick. Like, what do you think of it, Rowan?
Yeah, it really gave me like Night Gallery or Tales from the Crypt, like the show, like maybe Alfred Hitchcock Presents. Like, it gave me those kind of vibes, like kind of like 60s, 70s horror television, like, which I love. Like, I love that aesthetic. I love that feel. But yeah, it was like, it was so, like, weird and, like, funny, but also, like, yeah, rats can be, like, creepy, and smart rats are even creepier.
What was funny is I never found the rats creepy at any point in this movie. I thought they were always just cute. Like, the way, like, obviously,
wow,
you can't really direct these rats that well, right? So they're always just being rats, and then they're, like, eating and looking at the camera, and how they make them scary is they just play menacing music over it, and it's so great, like, all the time throughout the movie. I also love how, like, angry this guy gets over, like, what is it, like the quota not being met on the wall or whatever. It's like, have you guys ever been so angry that you just slam your hand against a nail on the wall? Like, it was just like it's just so ridiculous just to begin it all, like start it all off, and like the rats eating the blood and all this. It's just, man, oh man.
The other thing I really liked about it, and like, I don't know, this is gonna sound like I murder people in my spare time or something, but I really like the blood on the wall. It aesthetically looked really good. And yeah. I was just like, this is like a great choice, especially with like the giant machine and feeder. Like, we knew the minute we see this giant machine, you're like, yeah, this guy's done. It doesn't matter what happens. This guy's going in here. Some part of him is going in here.
A lesser movie would make you wait all the way until the third act in order to see that. But
yeah,
not Graveyard Shift. You know, we start with that.
Graveyard Shift knows what the people want, and it gives it to them, which
absolutely
is really awesome. Because, you know, I was kind of thinking about, you know, we're in 1990, so I'm thinking about like The Stand and It and the kind of this stuff where, I mean, I've said It is like one of my all-time favorites, but, you know, most of these Stephen King adaptations are mostly bloodless. Like, the kills are usually like kind of off camera, just implied, because most of this stuff is like television work, a lot of this 90s stuff. So I really like that. I was like, okay, like, this is not The Stand, this is not It, this wasn't for television, like, this is a straight up horror movie, like, give it to me.
With this, like, all together, I just find it doesn't read for television at all. Like, it does feel like an actual movie to me. Now, whether or not the movie's great, it's like, we can put that aside. But it does, I feel like people are trying in this movie, which is like, the practical effects, like, we'll get into it, but the bat is great. Like, the way they shoot it, like, they always make sure it's dark, it's wet. If it's like, it's close up on its face, like, you don't have a person in the actual shot, so you can kind of believe that it's larger than what it probably is. The sets, they're all like flooded and dirty and gross, and you have like dozens of mice and rats running around them. Like, it's all like, it feels larger than what I was expecting, especially for a movie that, like, most people give like a half star or one star on Letterboxd or whatever, right? That I was just like, man, there is a little bit of heart and soul put into this. And specifically with Brad Dourif.
Oh, yeah.
I think he's acting his ass off in this movie. There's
that monologue.
Like, yes. So that's what I want to talk about. The monologue, like, he's basically doing Quint's speech from Jaws, right? Like the Indianapolis sinking in the ocean and like the sharks developing a taste for men and like everyone getting eaten when the boat goes down. And he's there and he's talking about like the rats and the VC, like the Viet Cong developing, you know, these rats that have a taste for human flesh, and he's crying. And like, I'm like, damn, dude, like he's going for the Oscar in that scene. Like he's giving it his all. And that's the thing. A lot of these sorts of movies, especially from this era, are like, you know, horror movies that are poorly rated. You can find like so many people are just completely checked out of the movie. Brad Dourif is 100% like giving it his all in this.
I don't expect anything less from Brad Dourif. You know, this kind of reminds me like his performance. He's in another movie called Death Machine that I highly suggest to anyone. It's like a horror sci-fi, hamming it up, but it like, you know, he's always giving it his all. But yeah, I just thought he was like really good in this. I did make a note that said, I wish I had, you know, it's kind of a sad note for me personally, that I wish I had something in my life that I love as much as the Exterminator loved killing rats.
I literally have the same thing. I said, I wish I hated anything as much as Brad Dourif hates rats. So it's similar. You took it from the loving approach. I took it from the hateful approach. But like, I got the exact same note.
He's a passionate man.
Oh my God. Like when he's just screaming, you know, spread the word, fucker, and killing one of them, or spraying the hose down the chimney and going, adios, motherfuckers, like constantly cursing and like getting such glee out of like taking out these rats.
That's real dad behavior, honestly.
Oh yeah. There's also the one thing where he goes like, you know, there's only one way to deal with their kind, on their own terms. And then he shows an ankle holster with a gun in it. And I'm like, what? Are the rats using guns? Like, how is like him using like an ankle holster gun dealing with the rats on their own terms? Like, it literally makes zero sense. But there's numerous lines in this movie like that that just like got a kick out of me.
I also love that, you know, his like terrier, and he's just like, it's a rat terrier, and
of course
he's trained the dog just to sniff rats out and kill them. It just made me think about I don't know if you guys ever saw Best in Show, and they Eugene Levy's character, they like, their dog is a terrier, and they have like a song called Everyone Loves a Terrier. And okay. I just kept thinking about that song whenever the terrier was on, because it's like this really like sweet, silly song. And I was like, they should play that. Speaking of songs, I want to say, just to back it up a bit, we talked, you know, how much we love that opening scene. Also, for some weird reason, I really, really enjoyed the credits, the opening credits.
Yeah.
It had like this creepy music that I thought was like really effective. You know, I was like, this is giving me 80s, 90s like creepy music. And I really enjoyed it more so than I think most people should.
So did you stick around for the ending credits, though? Did you sit through
those?
Oh,
no, I didn't.
Literally the worst ending credits song of all time.
No.
It's literally just a fat bass line, like plucking a bass, punctuated with a bunch of quotes from the movie.
Oh, shit.
So they keep going like, the graveyard shift. And then it's like, plucking a guitar, and then he goes, the graveyard shift again. And like, it's just all these weird quotes, like, when's the last time you've been to a graveyard? Or like, breaks over, like all this shit just over a plucking bass guitar. I will say Ralph the Rat got a special thanks. I was looking to see if there was going to be any named rats. And then the very last song of the entire movie, like when the credits are over, it holds on a black screen for a second and it says, no more, no more, no. And then the song ends. And it's literally the worst ending credits of all time. Jill is cracking up. You have to go back and listen
to
it.
Yeah, I'm going
to
have to.
It was
to
so
now.
Good. It's so bad. It's literally like the worst ending credits I've ever heard.
They should have ended it with the woman saying, wouldn't mind his boots resting under my bed.
Yeah, there you go.
Shania Twain reference.
That character was very mic coded. I wish he was here to discuss.
I know.
I bet that was his favorite character, probably.
Oh, 100%.
know, and I feel like since these are kind of, you know, bonus episodes for the people, these are the kind of episodes I want people to listen to really find out how we make the sausage of the podcast. Because here is a little note that some people may not know, but Stream Screams, the scream is actually from this movie in our intro.
No way.
Cool.
Is it from when he says the graveyard shift and then there's a scream?
It's like a woman screaming. And
So I have a quote where it's we haven't talked about this guy yet, but it's Warwick.
Oh, you know, we'll talk about him.
Oh, my God. Yes, I'll save my thoughts for a second. But it's when he's talking to the main character, which I forgot his name right now, John. He's talking to him and he says, like, you know, it's the graveyard shift. And he's like saying, like, it's with this menace. And it literally hard cuts to like a woman screaming. Yeah, and it's like, once again, this movie knows what it's doing because like everybody knows what the graveyard shift is. It's not that scary to have to work an overnight. But like they cut to like a woman like screaming at the top of her lungs. So I wonder if it's that scream. That
I know it's from this film. So wow. There you go, a little sneak peek in how we make it. Yeah, I mean, we might as well have the Warwick conversation.
What do we think about Warwick in this movie?
Piece of shit.
Okay. Could you guys understand what he was
the
saying
accent
half the time?
Was wild. The accent was so
what he
wild.
Was doing.
What? Yeah. Was he trying to be Polish?
I don't know, because at one point I was like, this sounds like a really bad Christopher Walken impression. But then, like, he totally switches it up and doesn't sound like that ever again.
So I thought he just literally had a weird voice. I don't know. I've never listened to the guy before, but to me, it was just literally, like, I thought he was just him. Because it sounded like so much of his dialogue was ADR'd, like, recorded after the fact, that I was just like, okay, like, when they were recording him, was it a really bad recording session? Was it just like, oh, when we can understand him, it's ADR'd, like, what it is? There were so many scenes. The main one I'm thinking of is, like, when he kind of storms in and basically like sexually harasses the employee at the end. That mm-hmm. It's just like I can't understand like 80% of what this guy is saying, and I'm just vibing. I'm not turning on subtitles. I'm just watching it. Like I'm not getting anything out of this. This guy is just unhinged.
And you know what? He was a necessary villain. I did enjoy him just because he was so sleazy. He was like so dirty, and I was thinking because. You can probably already tell this early into it, like, I may have really connected with this movie and vibed with it. But I was thinking of, you know, it's funny, we talked about the poster, Jill brought it up, but I was thinking of My Bloody Valentine. And I was thinking, I think one of the reasons is, you know, in Nova Scotia, specifically Cape Breton, like, where My Bloody Valentine is set, was a mining town. And this, like, has that, like, small town mining field. And especially, like, you know, if you notice, like, the convenience store in the town is Warwick Convenience. Like, basically, this company owns everything in the town. So, I thought that was a really cool detail that kind of made it relatable to where I'm from.
Well, yeah, like the blue collarness of this movie, like it's not something that you see in too many horror movies. Because once again, your cast is usually like a bunch of teenagers, or, you know, they're not just like mill workers most of the time. It's not like the most interesting group of characters usually to choose, right? Like I could think, like, yeah, it's probably like Alien or Aliens has a bunch of people that are essentially space truckers, you know. And yeah. I think the third act of this movie does kind of turn into Aliens a little bit, with everyone down in the tunnels just walking around getting picked off looking for the bat. But it is like, it's an interesting choice. It definitely has like a small town vibe. And it is just, it's nice to see a bunch of people that actually need to work for a living and basically like, well, listen, I know, I understand it's fucked up. My factory's flooded and there's a giant bat in here. But I mean, it's not, I got to pay the bill somehow, you know.
I definitely agree with you on the fact that this should probably be like on the level of Alien and considered.
Okay. I feel like I'm being misquoted a little bit, but
Jesus. You know. Yeah.
Speaking of money, I thought it was really funny. Like they do the, you know, the whole hype up where Warwick's doing like, you know, oh, you went to college boy. And he's talking about, well, I got some overtime for you and all this stuff. And like really hyping him up for this job. And I was like, but the job he selected him to do was basically just be a janitor in this basement. But he was making it like, oh, yeah, like this is, you're moving on up. And now you're a janitor.
I think he was just being a prick. I don't think he has a high opinion.
I do think he was being a prick.
Education.
And this is where I really found reading the story, it worked better in the story. Because the story, although it's not long, it's what, 13 pages? Like the story. Throughout the whole thing, you're getting the vibe, like he's always talking to John Hall and calling him college boy and, like, insulting him or, like, belittling him, where I felt with this, he was a prick, but, like, it didn't seem like he was necessarily being, like, malicious just to him. It was, like, kind of everybody.
Oh, yeah.
In the story, I think it's more so, like, specifically this
guy. Because of his education?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. No, I never got that. I just got he was a sleaze, you know?
In the story, it's, like, a whole different kind of dialogue of what's happening. Like, you have this guy, he's a drifter. He just goes to, like, one place to work, and he changes it up every year. And then you got this foreman guy, Warwick, who's like always picking on him, like we just said, you know, for having an education and just roaming around, basically. And he becomes like the real villain, really, besides the rats, but they kind of band together against the rats. And in the end of the story, actually, I think Hull, who the main character is, he pushes Warwick like into the rats or like the big fucking rat and then tries to run away. But then he gets taken down by the other rats and dies. And so it's a completely different ending to that movie. And, you know, it's more like a personal thing against the two of them, like a rivalry.
Which is interesting because in this movie, I think it's a little bit more just he's has it out for everybody. But if it was a personal thing, it would work better for my Apocalypse Now reading of this movie.
Oh shit, there you go.
Which I think Warwick is a stand-in for Marlon Brando's character in this movie. And our guy, John, who I keep forgetting his name, I think he's a Martin Sheen's character and kind of descending into the heart of darkness. There's a lot of weird references to Apocalypse Now in this. Like, for example, Warwick putting all the, you know, the mud on his face, for example.
Yeah,
you know, like
it's
like, what is that off the bottles? None of us know what it is. Like, is it oil? Is it dirt? Is it mud? What is it? But he puts it all over his face, similarly in Apocalypse Now. They descend further and further in. They keep losing people. And, like, they basically go crazy by the end of the movie. It ends in a knife fight. You know, it's very much like when I was watching this, the cut to the rats surfing. Essentially how that's used in Apocalypse Now is they're showing like horrific war crimes and then they do like a hard cut to all the Americans celebrating and surfing and they have surf music playing and they're all chilling out. This movie, it winds up being like someone is murdered by like the bat, right? Like off screen, hard cut to all the rats just surfing and hanging out, you know, vibing. And I was just like, I think this movie is trying to do an Apocalypse Now thing. There's also, like, the scene where, like, they're kind of John and I forget her name in the movie, but they're, like, wading through the water and they kind of go up, like, really high as well. Like, there's all these shots that remind me of Apocalypse Now. Now, I've only seen Apocalypse Now once. I'm not an expert. But as I was watching it, I was like, I think they're going for this, especially with that whole, like, Vietnam War monologue early in the movie. And since so much of this movie is, like, tongue-in-cheek, I think they were going for it.
It's hilarious.
I agree with you, Colton. This movie should be put up there with Apocalypse Now.
So it should. So far, it should be compared to Jaws, Aliens, and Apocalypse Now.
Yeah, when you mention those, you also have to mention Graveyard Shift.
Graveyard Shift. Wow.
As some of the great movies of our time.
When you guys were watching this movie, did you get thirsty at all? Like, did you feel like you needed to crack open an ice cold Diet Pepsi or a Mountain Dew? Or
I was.
You know,
I
need that DP.
I ran out.
Oh,
you
no.
Ran out?
I had none in my house, and it was making me thirstier.
Wow. I wonder, do you think this was paid for product placement, or do you think it was actually just...
I hope it was paid for product placement.
I hope so, too, because that makes it funnier somehow, because I don't know how long they just linger on shots of like a Diet Pepsi like brand facing the camera perfectly in this movie, but it was enough that I was like, I need to go to the fridge, you know? I gotta crack one open.
It worked.
Oh, yeah, it always works for me. If anyone knows me, they know Rowan loves a good DP, so I definitely... always get into the Diet Pepsi. I did.
That means some other things on different parts of the internet, but
yeah,
you know, I'm happy for you, Rowan.
Yeah, I like to, you know, refresh myself with DPs all the time. So
good for you. Proud of you.
And yeah, so I did have a question for Colton, because I did see Colton's Letterboxd review, which said, you know, about Diet Pepsi saving the day. So I wanted to know, with the product placement, with this movie making you thirsty, is this movie not a homage to Nova Scotia, but one to Newfoundland? Is this somehow kind of the greatest Newfoundland horror movie ever made because of the Diet Pepsi connection?
Yeah,
because
we got the Pepsi factory, I guess, or at least Pepsi prominently placed in the movie.
We love Pepsi.
I'm just losing my words, Rowan, just thinking about this. Yeah, I mean, we got some funny accents in there.
Yeah.
We got blue-collar people. Mm-hmm. We got Pepsi. All we need is like a codfish, and we're basically there. Yeah. So I need to go and have
an iconic Newfoundland movie. So
the rats could be moose.
All right, sure. Yeah, let's just go with that. The rats are vermin, just like moose.
We got a real moose problem.
Or also are they mice? Because Warwick says they're mice.
Right. That's what I was saying.
So I was wondering about that. Is it supposed to be rats or mice the entire movie?
Supposed to be rats.
Okay, well.
And what is a bat but a rat with wings?
100%. That was intentional. That was great. In the story, is it a bat or is it a giant rat?
It's a mutated rat, which is a bat. But they actually say, what is a rat but a bat? Or what is a bat but a rat with wings?
Okay, so it's not that clever. Okay.
It's a line from the story.
Wow.
It's actually really interesting that a 13-page... like short story into this, you know, this is what, an hour and 20 something minutes, I think, like an hour and 28 or something.
Yeah, 89 minutes. Yeah,
we gotta talk about that.
I think it's really interesting. I thought it was a pretty good adaptation. Like, I was like, this is kind of pretty true to the story, which is weird because when you think about most Stephen King things, it totally isn't. Like, but I thought, like, the tone, everything of the from the story, like, definitely in the story, these guys, as they kind of descend into the basement and find out there's another level, like, you see these men unraveling in the story, just like they kind of unravel in this to find another cavern. I feel like I'm watching a Killer Clowns from Outer Space, where they're like, another door. It's basically just that, except another cavern.
Or like in Apocalypse Now, and they keep going further and further down the river, and they're like, another war crime, another atrocity of war. You know, it's...
Jesus.
Jill, you were shaking your head. You don't think this is a good adaptation of the story, I guess.
No, because I read the story. Mistake number one. I read it before I watched the movie, and I loved the story. It was a fun little horror story. 13 pages, really short. I think it would have made a great Creepshow episode, you know, and a lot of the Creepshow episodes are Stephen King. Well, he worked on the show, but one of them was a direct Stephen King adaptation, Grey Matter. And I think if they would have done something like this, Graveyard Shift, in 20 minutes, they would have executed it and hit all the notes on the story. Shut up, Rowan. They would have hit them all perfectly, but they were trying to really flesh this out for like a feature horror film, and I think they were doing too much, and it really took away from me the simplicity of it just being a cool little monster story when they're trying to add, you know, all these other elements to it, like the girl character. I'm not saying she shouldn't be there. She was not in the story.
Jill hates women. Wow.
I do not.
Extra.
And it's just a different vibe. I think the vibe of the story is very, like, you know, I mean, they're both very blue collar oriented, but I think the story is much more simple. It's like these people have to work on July 4th weekend for overtime, and they have a deadline to clean this basement, but they find that it's infested with rats, and then, you know, they get fucking destroyed by the rats. And I think it's just a much more simple story. And I like how fun and simple that was. And I feel like the movie kind of dragged on for me, and it was making me kind of bored at times because I was like, why are we adding all this?
Wow.
Extra shit.
Well, I got a question for you. Was there Chekhov's Diet Pepsi can in the short story.
No, but well, in the beginning and throughout, there was can throwing, but it did not specify a different brand.
Well, it said the brand. I didn't recognize the name.
It wasn't that.
It started with a Z. Yeah, it was like, so I think it must have been made up or something.
Probably.
Mm. Yeah, because that was also like a crazy moment for me. Because obviously I was watching this movie. I was like, yeah, this is dumb product placement. Obviously, they're spending a lot of time loading up the slingshot with the cans and, you know, fire them at the rats. And you get, you know, you even have one of the characters saying like, sure beats nailing them with soda pop, you know, or whatever. Right. It's just silly shit. Like, they keep referencing these cans. And I'm like, oh, man. Diet, you know, Pepsi opened their wallet for this. I was like, this is a huge product placement. You know, mm-hmm. there was probably a commercial campaign and everything. And then in the third act, the fact that the Diet Pepsi can comes back, and it's like, it's how the main character survives and defeats the bat. And it's edited in such a crazy way where it's like, you show the Diet Pepsi can in the slingshot, slowly taking aim, slow motion reaction shots. It's flying through the
air. I was on the edge of my seat.
Oh my God. It was crazy. Like, just like the timing on it. Like, you could have easily just like cut that with him missing and it'd be like the funniest thing ever. Like, it was just, but instead, it was this crazy moment where they paid off all this like product placement for the whole movie. I was clapping.
Yeah. I probably woke Exilia up while she slept, because when it hit the button, I just yelled, fuck yeah, and I had my headphones on. I was just like, oh yeah.
We were standing up and clapping at that moment.
I was so excited.
It's crazy. I didn't expect it. That was a genuine shock in this movie, that the product placement was motivated and paid off.
Sure was.
It was crazy.
So what did you guys think of the actual monster design? Like, the actual effects of this. I thought it was pretty impressive.
So initially, I was just disappointed that it wasn't a giant rat. You know, I think there's that Cabinet of Curiosities movie, I think, has a big rat, which I thought this was going to kind of be, you know, I figured that would have been like homaging this or something, right? So I was expecting it to be a big rat. But the first time when the person kind of gets, you know, the bat wing comes across and their face is pressing through it, I was just like, damn, that's actually pretty good looking. Like, I'm impressed. Mm-hmm. Once again, I was like, I thought this was going to be low budget. And then there was stuff like one of the characters lighting the lighter and then like kind of the camera panning over a little bit and then like the bat like bursting its face out and it's all wet and gross. And I'm like, shit, okay, this is pretty good. I was impressed with the bat. I thought it looked good, basically, yeah, the whole movie. And it, even when it kind of like gets Warwick and like wraps its wings around it, you can tell like it was cut and framed in such a way that like you don't see the bat's head and body in there. It's mostly just the wings, and the wings look so good. But if you put it all together, it probably wouldn't work that well. But the way, like, they were very tactful with how they shot this creature, and I thought it always looked good. I liked all the close-ups of like its milky eye or like its claws or how the wings actually looked like, what, you know, the membrane of what a wing would look like on a bat. It was good altogether, like not even being like cheeky or poking fun. It was just a good creature design. I thought it was good.
Mm-hmm. And lots of details too.
Yes, it was just very well done. And I also love just like Warwick screaming, you know, we're going to hell together. And it just instantly dies. Like, just like, that's it. You know, it's so good.
I was going to say, I also agree with what Mark was saying about it, is I really did like a lot of the setting and the backgrounds, especially like when they kind of drop into like the magnificent huge cavern. It's like a painted background.
It's like a final boss level. They all drop down. It's like, this is where we're going to have the knife fight, which is crazy. I can't believe Jane just gets stabbed and that's it. You know, it's insane. But yeah, where it's like obviously the painted backdrop with like, you know, all the cavern, but then it pans up and you could see like a little hole through where you could see like almost like the mausoleum on the hill or whatever it is there, the factory or whatever it is. It's so cool. Like, it reminds me of obviously like the haunted house on the hill. Like, it's, you know, that's clearly what it's paying homage to, but it's very well done.
It's kind of interesting because it's like a familiar but yet odd setting, just because like, I can't think of another horror that is set in like this kind of textiles, cloth factory, wool factory. And it's just like, it's so interesting because there's like, you know, even like the machine that, you know, ends up killing the giant rat, but kills the guy in the beginning, like
the loom.
It's just like interesting machinery you don't normally see in a movie. And it was just like, really unique setting and really claustrophobic, and I really liked it. Everything looked really, yucky and gunky when they're spraying it down. And yeah, I just like, I really, really liked the set design in this.
I thought it was also really funny when you had like the piles of bones, like, you know, where you're talking about the set design when Warwick, he finds it, falls down the mine shaft and they pull him out of like a comically large pile of bones. Where I'm like, like, yeah, that's great set design. You know, I'm surprised they never put like the xylophone in as they were like walking over the bones or something. You know, it was good shit.
I did have a question for you. I was curious that I was thinking about as this goes on. Do you think Warwick knew about the monster in there? Because he all like I found that he always seemed like he kind of knew there was something up. Like, he seemed to know it was connected to the cemetery, and like he just always had this hint that he knew something was wrong, people were dying.
I think that's basically what he knows. I think where you said something is wrong, I think he knows something is wrong, people are vanishing, or they're only showing up for one shift and going away. But I don't think he knew the extent that it was like a giant bat, for example, right? Like, I think he knew there's something weird on the go, but he doesn't know explicitly what. Because if that was the case, he probably would have been far more sheepish about even, you know, heading underground through the caverns and all that stuff, right? If he knew that there's gonna be a huge ass bat just waiting for him, right? I want to ask a question. Is there a more dangerous combination than women and stairs? Because I don't know if you noticed, but two of our heroines in this movie get taken out by stairs, or at least injured by stairs.
Oh yeah, this is true.
One of them, she trips, she's coming down the stairs, she falls down, gets like brutally like beat up. Like, I couldn't believe it. Like, literally, like, wrist broken, sliced across the chest, bleeding head. Like it's a crazy fall down the stairs. So much so that she's just helpless and that the rats just come and eat her alive. And then the other one, Jane, she's just coming down the stairs, misses a step, hurts her ankle, and then she has to be carried by John for the rest of the movie, or at least, like, brought along. So, just wondering, like, Jill, is that something in your everyday life that you're fearful of? You know, stairs?
I'm a clumsy person, so yeah. But I'm wondering if that was a choice just because they didn't want, you know, the women that they put into this movie to get, like, hurt or killed for a more like violent reason, you know what I mean? And it's just like a mistake, and then the fucking rats come and eat them.
I don't know. When I was watching it, I was like, that is a gnarly fall down the stairs. And then when I was watching it again, I was like, wait, Jane just fell down the stairs too. Right. There's only a couple of women in this movie and they both get, you know, injured by falling down the stairs. I mean, Jane survives, but I mean, it's, you know, it's a bump along the journey to her inevitable death eventually.
I got a funny fact for you here. As I was exploring Letterboxd after I watched this, David Andrews, who is the actor that plays John Hall, our lead, I just thought it was an interesting fact that he's kind of a apparently horror legend. Because if you read his biography, it says he set his career off in style by starring in 1984's horror classic, A Nightmare on Elm Street. And when you click on A Nightmare on Elm Street and find David Andrews, I just want to let you know he's basically on the bottom of the list as a background actor. And that is the biggest Wikipedia flex I have ever seen to say that he starred in A Nightmare on Elm Street.
That's awesome. No, I never knew that, but I'm glad I know that now.
But yeah, and I just thought it was interesting. Like, I looked up Ralph S. Singleton, the director, who I had no idea who that was. Only movie he ever directed.
Really?
Yeah.
This?
Yeah, this is it.
Well, I guess it probably got terrible, you know, critical reception, probably made no money, so I guess it makes sense. But
so the amazing thing about, you know, the collector's edition of this is there's like tons of interviews. They interview him, they interview all the actors, all that kind of stuff. Sick. I didn't watch them all. I did watch the one with him. I said before we recorded, it was kind of funny that Ralph S. Singleton must be from a similar area as Donald Trump, because their voice sounds exactly the same. They have the same, like, gestures and movements. I was like, they must be from, like, the same part of New York. It's pretty funny. If you close your eyes, you think Donald Trump just directed Graveyard Shift, which might would wow. also be incredible.
That would be, I'd watch that as well. That'd be a,
good Lord. You
know, that wouldn't even have to be a Patreon pick.
But it's interesting because I assume, you know, he kind of did this to try out directing, but he never wanted to be a director. He said he wanted to be a production manager. That's what he still is. And like, he's been production manager. Like, I was looking like huge movies, like massive movies. Like, he's going on like 30-year career. And basically, the reason he got this movie was because Stephen King really liked him. And he was a producer on Pet Sematary Part 2. And yeah, Stephen King liked him. And like, he sold this for like $2,300, $2,800. I mean, he didn't know that he had a fucking multi-million dollar story going on here. So I can't blame him. You know, yeah, just a little fun fact. I thought it was kind of funny that this is the only thing he's done. And I think if you bat one for one, that's 100%. So
it's pretty good. Yeah. I mean, it's better than a lot of directors.
Did you guys have any other notes, or are we good to get in the rating this?
Mm-hmm. I think we're good. Yeah.
Yeah, I think if there's ever a film that we choose to do another episode on, this is in the contentions.
I guess real quick, did you guys get scared by the skeleton jump scare in this movie? There's a part where literally the movie just treats it as like they're just like going through the cavern and like a skeleton rolls over and like reveals itself, and it's like they do like the whole like big horror jump scare moment. I'm just like, bro, it's just a spooky skeleton. Like, it's just
from Home Depot.
I love this shit. It was just so silly. It just reminds me of like Indiana Jones or something, right? Like when that happens.
So let's land the plane on this one, I guess. If you are new to the show, our rating system is nay, okay, yay, or slay. Jill, what would you rate Graveyard Shift?
Ooh, the pressure is on. I'm going to give Graveyard Shift an okay, because I liked it. It was fun. I like the atmosphere, the blue collar thing, the textile factory. I thought that was cool. I love the monster being a mutant giant rat bat thing. And I really like the story. My big mistake, though, was reading the story before I watched the movie. I should have done it the other way around, maybe. And I would have maybe enjoyed the movie more, because I just kept comparing it and it lost some of the magic for me. But yeah, I'll give it an okay. What about you, Rowan?
I have to give it a yay. I have to give it a yay. I mean, if I was a big dick, I'd give it a slay. But I mean, you know, I feel like I'm going to give it a yay. Everyone knows it's a slay. We already said it's up there with Apocalypse Now, that kind of stuff. Like, this is an Academy Award winner, if I've ever seen one.
For Brad Dourif. I mean, he was acting his ass off.
I think this is the second Brad Dourif. I can't believe this is only the second horror movie we've ever reviewed with Brad Dourif. Brad Dourif also in Eyes of Laura Mars. And surprisingly, we've never done a Chucky movie. So, yeah, I love this. I had so much fun with this. I thought it, like, zipped along. At no point was I bored. Like, everything, there was always something to laugh at or just, like, truly be like, this is amazing. What am I watching? It looks fantastic. Like, you know, for a movie that, like you said, Colton, like, the first thing I do before I watch it, I'm on Letterboxd. Like, what's this average rating on this? And I'm like, oh boy, this isn't going to be too good. And I couldn't believe it. I was like, man, this might be better than anything I've watched new this year. Like, this is that good. I really, really like this. And this is to go into like my regular rotation now.
Just give it a slay.
No, it's not a slay. It's a yay with like a slay in my heart, I guess.
Okay.
But this is one that like, I'm going to tell people about if they haven't seen it. I'm going to sit them down and like, I feel like you can have a lot of fun with this in a group of people. What about you, Colton? What are you giving it?
Oh, this is a yay from me as well. Yeah, I have to give it a yay. I was expecting it to be bad, and I was expecting it to be like so bad it's good. But I think a lot of the writing and stuff in this movie is self-aware. I think they know what sort of movie they're making, where it's like kind of like a B-movie creature feature. But it's not like so B-movie or so like, you know, like such a bad production where you can just tell like it's incredibly cheap and everyone's checked out. People were actually trying to make a movie with this. Like, as we've mentioned, obviously the creature effects are good. A lot of the set designs are good. They have a huge painted backdrop. A lot of it is just really fun. There's good kills in it. We never even talked about, you know, some of the kills, but it's all around just a good time. It flies by. And once again, Brad Dourif just acting his ass off. But most importantly, I am a Diet Pepsi man. I love Diet Pepsi.
That's right.
And it was crazy to see Diet Pepsi factored into this movie in such a big way. And yeah, it was just, it's a yay from me. You know, Chekhov's Diet Pepsi can is insane. What I will say is the ending credits song is a hard nay. You should definitely not listen to that. It's an awful song, but you know, the rest of the movie, yay. It was a good time. I don't understand why this is, you know, so maligned and so hated. I thought it was good.
So two yays and an okay. I think that's somewhat fair.
That's pretty good. Yeah, that's pretty good for this movie, I think.
Yeah,
that's generous.
I think the only thing that could make it, you know, reasonable is three slays, but that's fine.
You know, Mike would give this a fucking slay.
I mean, I don't know if he would, but
or a yay. But if the rats all had little wigs on, it would 100% be a slay for him.
Yes, I think there would need to be a little bit more attitude in the movie. I think you know. And if you're not doing so already, you can follow us on our socials at It Slays Podcast. We're on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, Slasher, Letterboxd, Threads, Blue Sky. If there's a social media, we're probably there at It Slays Podcast. And if you want to support the shows like our Horror Hounds, Holly, Nicholas, Patrick, Mark, Stephen, Joy, Carvey, and Dan, gain access to the Patreon-exclusive show Stream Screams, hosted by Jill, and get episodes of our main show 48 hours early, be sure to head on over to patreon.com/itslayspodcast and choose whatever tier works best for you. Rowan, you gotta try and find what that surf song is.
Oh, yeah.
To put it into the playlist.
It's the Sharkula theme song.
I'll find it. I will find it. But yeah, so go to Spotify, go to the It Slays Podcast horrific playlist. If you have any problems finding it, you can go to any of the social media that Colton mentioned and go into the bio, click the Linktree link, and it will take you directly to the playlist. We upload licensed music or scores from horror movies we reviewed or iconic horror movies or just horror movies we love. So go on there and get your spooky music on, and hopefully I can get some music from Graveyard Shift on there so I can bang out to it. And I
first DP, now banging out.
Yeah,
all right.
banging out with DP. So,
Wow.
Yeah, I think that is everything. As always, thank you for all the support.
Yeah, and thanks to Mark for choosing this great movie.
Yeah.
I think our next Patreon pick is probably going to be Steven's pick. So, Steven, if you happen to be listening to this, we might not be reviewing it in December just because we have a pretty stacked month already with having to record a couple of things back to back with the holidays coming up. But in the new year, you will be our first Patreon pick for sure.
That's right. So you think of something, because you've got like a high bar now with Graveyard Shift. I don't even know if our normal picks can overdo that one. So yeah, thank you for all the support. We'll be back. I am your humble host, Rowan.
It's, I don't know, the big cheese, Colton. I don't know what to say. I was trying to think of a rat-inspired one. I don't know. It's Diet Pepsi aficionado, Colton.
And bye, it's Jill.
Show's over.
Yeah.
The Graveyard Shift.
No more! No more!
No!
We're going to expand our weekly video segment to take you into the back shelves of your local video store. Back where it says horror videos, and where kids are devouring some awful films that we call the video nasties.
Are you freebasing? Inquiring minds want to know.
I have to break free from this culture of mechanical reproductions and the thick incrustations dying on the surface.
What the prime time gets?
Mom with the new flesh.
The pain, I can assure you, will be exquisite. As for our deaths,
come with me and be immortal.
We have such sights to show you.
Gotta return some videotapes.